that are powerful that just helps things go so much better. Thank you. I know I mention you all sometimes by name, and if somebody listens from a recording or something, they don't all always know who I'm talking about, but that's okay. It's important for us here today. I just thinking about something that happened this past week. I feel like that Brother David Ray and I have a pretty powerful relationship. I mean, we talk. We don't have to beat around the bush. He can call me up and say, and I can call him up, and I don't have to ask him how everybody in the neighborhood is before I ask him, could you do something for me? And it's the same way he can call me. And if he's got something on his head, on his heart that he wants to, me to know about, he can just tell me. I like it that way. I really do. Brother Mark's kind of that way too. He calls me up sometimes and he says, hey, got a question for you. Okay, let's just go with it. You know, and Brother Jason, I heard his name before, but Wednesday night, it's the first time I've met him. So I want it to get that way, but we don't have quite that powerful relationship yet. I believe it's going to come, all right? But I want us to have a relationship with God that when we're in distress and we say, Lord, I need some help, I want it to be a solid connection. I don't want us to have to introduce ourselves or to get rid of a bunch of rubbish in our relationship with God. I want us to be able to go right to the point. You know what I'm talking about? You don't want to call somebody up and have to apologize for the last time that you borrowed their shovel before you ask if they got a rake you can use. Right? You want to be able to call them up and say, hey, I need a rake. You got a rake I can borrow? And you want them to say, sure, come on over. You don't need to ask them how the cat's doing and the dog and the grandchild. Just, I need a rake. You got one I can borrow. I want us to have that kind of relationship with God and be able to anticipate Him answering us in like fashion. So, we've talked about some things, obedience being one of them, trust being one of them, and how powerful trust is and yet how fragile it can be. So I'd like for us to look at a powerful relationship in action tonight. So I'm going to draw a very, very crude map up here on the board, or just a couple things. So I want y'all to kind of pretend with me that this is the sea of Galilee. So, the Sea of Galilee, y'all have heard Jesus being referred to as the Galilean, right? That's something that's in our memory bank. So, the Sea of Galilee is, if you looked on the map, is quite a bit north of the Dead Sea, okay? And the Jordan River goes from, I think it comes out of the Sea of Galilee or comes close to that and feeds in to the Dead Sea, and there's no exit. It just evaporates, and that's why we have salty water in the Dead Sea, but that's a side thought. But Galilee is the vicinity that Jesus came from as a young man growing up. And the distance between the Sea of Galilee and Nazareth is about 20 to 25 miles. Okay? And according to some people, 20 to 25 miles would have been considered about a day's journey in Bible times. Okay? So, I want us to look at, and I'm not going to read the fifth chapter of Mark, but I'd like for us to turn to the fifth chapter of Mark. And it begins, it says here, chapter 5, and they came over unto the other side of the sea, unto the country of the Gadarenes. And if we do a little research, we find that the Gadarenes was over kind of the southeast area of the Sea of Galilee. And when he got over there on this sea coast over here in the southeast section of the Sea of Galilee, that's where the story of Legion occurred. And you remember that? Legion was a man that was possessed with many evil spirits, or many, he was devil possessed, we would say. And he had a little bit of hesitation, but he came, it says, in the seventh verse, it says, he cried with a loud voice and said, "What have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of the Most High God? I adjure thee by God that thou torment me not." And he said unto them, "Come out of the man, thou unclean spirit." And so Jesus delivered this man of this powerful demon possession. And this man later on, I believe it says, that they found him clothed and in his right mind. Wonderful deliverance by the power of God. Everybody on that page? So we find then that Jesus got back in a ship, and he went back across the Sea of Galilee, and I don't know exactly where he landed. It doesn't really tell us. It just says that there was apparently a village there or something with a synagogue. It could have been a number of places that Jesus probably was familiar with as a young man and during his time of growing up. And when he got there, there was a man that met him that was kind of a ruler in the synagogue, and his name was Jairus. And Jairus came to him and he said, "I have a daughter that's desperately sick. She's near to death. Would you come and heal her?" Sought Jesus out. And Jesus said, "I'll come." And as he was going to Jairus' house, there was a crowd that amassed. I don't know what caused the crowd to start to accumulate around Jesus, but it could have been that the word from what happened over here on this side of the Sea of Galilee had somehow got over here. Maybe one of his disciples told them, "You remember? Have you ever remember anything about Legion? You know that man that lived among the tombs? You know, reputations of bad things kind of spread long distances, don't they? We could have a bad situation happen in Joplin. In fact, there are people today, somebody come to my place of work and said that they were driving Route 66 and they had a breakdown. We were working on their vehicle and they were going around and seeing some different spots. And one of the things they went and seen was a place where Bonnie and Clyde stayed in Joplin. Well, that's a bad situation, right? But it's had a reputation that's held on for years to this little place. Okay? So I just imagine that somehow it leaked out that Legion, when they left and come back across on the ship across Galilee, that Legion was no longer living amongst the tombs like a crazy man, that he was delivered and he was in his right mind. And he was probably going and telling other people what Jesus did for him and who Jesus was. So somehow between that and the ruler of the synagogue coming to Jesus and asking him to have mercy and heal his daughter, there was a crowd that started to gather around Jesus. And as Jesus walked from wherever he met Jairus to his house, people just accumulated. More and more people started gathering. And it was during that time when the crowd was all assimilated around Jesus that the woman pressed through the crowd and touched the hem of his garment, and healing virtue went out, and she was healed of an issue that she had for like 12 years or something like that. So I'm just trying for us to get this picture that where Jesus went, people believed him, they trusted him, and they were pursuing his presence and asking him, would you have mercy on me? Would you heal my daughter? And this woman reached out in faith, believing that if she could just merely touch the hem of his garment, she could be made whole. And they received the blessing. There was power that went out. Okay? So when he got, as they were going, in the 36th verse of the 5th chapter, as they was going along, maybe 35, it says, while he yet spake, there came from the ruler of the synagogue's house certain which said, thy daughter is dead. Why troublest thou the master any further? So, sure enough, this girl was sick. She was near to death, all right, because when they got almost to the house, somebody came out of the house and said, don't bother Jesus anymore, she's already died. Now, I don't know if you've ever been in rapid fire, big developments, but Jesus was right in the middle of it. And notice what it says in the 36th verse. It says, as soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said unto the ruler of the synagogue, or said to Jairus, be not afraid, only believe. So they went on to the house. And when they got to the house, Jesus took, I think, two of his disciples and went in and not only lifted her up from death, but healed her body, and it says the damsel arose and walked. That's verse 42. For she was of the age of 12 years, and they were astonished with a great astonishment. You talking about people's jaw hitting the ground? We have that expression today. They were amazed at the power that Jesus was able to demonstrate. And he charged them straitly that no man should know it, and commanded that something should be given her to eat. You know, if you're sick, they probably hadn't been feeding her. She probably hadn't been able to eat. But now he said, you ought to give her something to eat. She's recovered. She's well. That's quite the event, isn't it? 6th chapter. I'd like to read a little bit here. First verse beginning, it says, and he went out from thence, and he came into his own country. Own country. Where was that? That was over here at Nazareth. You remember when his parents brought him back from Egypt? Because he was born in Bethlehem, and because Herod the Great was threatening to kill him, the wise men had gave them gifts, and an angel had warned them, and they took him to Egypt. And then when he was a little, I don't know, they got word that Herod had died, and they came back, not to Bethlehem, but they came back to Nazareth. And that's where Jesus was raised as a small boy, into a young man, into adulthood. He'd lived there for a while. I grew up in the Boot Hill of Missouri. I left there when I was 19 years old, moved to Oklahoma. And I've been back a few times, could probably count the times I've been back on one hand. Every time I go back, I don't really have phone numbers of my old classmates and the neighbors and all of that, but I like to drive through the town where I lived and go by the house I grew up in and see if any other houses have changed, any house has been torn down or a new house has been built. And I like to drive down the main street where there was other businesses and all, and it's pretty much a ghost town now. It's just about all dried up. And once in a while, I'll be driving through town and I'll recognize somebody that I used to know. And I can pull over and stop and I can talk to them. And then I can reminisce a little bit about what it was like to grow up there. And I wonder sometimes, it says here in 6:1 of Mark, it says, and he went from thence, talking about Jesus, he went from this place where all of the activity and the power was being manifested. And I want you to notice how the people flocked to Jesus. They gathered around him. I don't know what all caused that, but I think it was because the people believed that he had something that they wanted, because they had some trust in him. And Jesus, I wonder if he wasn't thinking, I want to be able to take this to the place that I grew up. So it says, and he went from this and came into his own country, and his disciples follow him. And when the Sabbath day was come, and he began to teach in the synagogue. So there was a synagogue in Nazareth as well. It says, and when he began to teach in the synagogue. Don't you think that would have been a natural thing for him to do? When he was at the other place, I believe he probably would have been invited to teach in there. And he got to the synagogue in Nazareth, and it says, and many hearing him were astonished, saying, from whence hath this man these things? And what wisdom is this which is given unto him, that even such mighty works are wrought by his hand? So I don't know what he was telling them. Maybe he was telling them that that man, Legion, was now delivered, clothed and in his right mind. I don't know. Maybe he told them about Jairus' daughter being raised from the dead. I don't know what it was that he said to them, but they began to criticize the mighty works and the wisdom that he was talking about. And listen to why they did it. They said, is not this the carpenter? Jesus? We remember you. You're the one that your daddy was a carpenter, and he taught you to be a carpenter, and you fixed some things for us as a young man, and we watched you learning the trade and the craft. And I don't know what their opinion of his ability as a carpenter was, but their opinion was he was just a carpenter. He says, is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary, the brother of James and Joseph and of Judah and Simeon? And are not his sisters here with us? And they were offended at him. They were offended at Jesus being in a place to give them the gospel. And I want you to notice the effect of that. And Jesus said unto them, a prophet is not without honor, but in his own country, and among his own kin, and in his own house. And he could there do no mighty work, save that he laid his hands upon a few sick folk and healed them. A few sick folk. And he marveled because of their unbelief. And he went around about the villages teaching. Totally different reception than at the other place where Jairus was. The rulers of the synagogue was waiting on him. The people were flocking around him. They were just trying to get close enough to touch him. You know what unbelief does to power? It pretty much lets it go out the window. You know what the absence of trust does? It pretty much lets power go out the window. You know what the lack of obedience does to trust? It pretty much nullifies any power. And Jesus said here, or what it said about him, that he could there do no mighty work, save he laid hands upon a few sick folk and healed them. You know, I think he was probably thinking that if he got back to his hometown, there could be a real revival breakout. But because of people's unbelief, Jesus' hands were tied. And it crippled him. He couldn't hardly do anything. And he went around about every one of these cities, had little villages around about them. And he was able to go around and do some teaching. But his ability to really manifest the power that his heavenly Father had given him was shortchanged. I wonder sometimes how many people were in Nazareth that it would have liked to have been healed, that wanted to be healed, that had an issue with the enemy somehow. Maybe not legion per se, but maybe it was something else that they realized they was under the control. You know, today we have people that are under the control of narcotics and under of what is this stuff that's coming into our country, fentanyl. I don't know where that fits in the drug world, but we have people that's under the power of that, and I've got to believe that people that's under the power of that thing would like to be turned free, set free. At some point, the people that's doing meth, that's flopping around and can't stand up and are losing their teeth, I think somewheres they have a rational thought that they'd like not to do that. But instead, the enemy's got a hook in them. And I would like to see people delivered of that. And I certainly don't want to negatively impact the power of God because of unbelief on my part, because of unwilling to extend a hope of deliverance to the ones that are in bondage to those kind of things. I wonder sometimes how many people today are hindered in receiving the blessing they'd like to get because there's unbelief amongst those that should be believing. You know, if anybody should have believed that Jesus was the Messiah, the folks in Nazareth should have believed that. Shouldn't they? So I'll ask you a question. Why should they? Do you remember what the testimony of Jesus was? He was tempted in all points like as we are, yet without sin. You know, if you don't know me very well, I'll make an impression on you of some sort. But the people that really know me are the ones that could testify and know whether I live to what I preach. My wife, my family, my coworkers, the people that spent a lot of time with me, maybe been on a road trip together, maybe worked a job with me for a while, for a few years, or a few weeks, or a few months. You get to know people better. Jesus didn't grow up in Nazareth and leave a bad impression on people. When Jesus began his ministry, I believe that there were people in Nazareth that had to think, you know, he's always been a little different. He's always been one of the finest young men that was ever in this town. And if there ever should have been a place that people should have flocked around Jesus, it should have been Nazareth. It should have been there, but instead they were unwilling to look on him as anything other than a carpenter. And it hindered their belief, and it hindered people that needed real deliverance. Now, if we read more of this chapter, we would find out that Herod got word about the miracles and the deliverance and the power that was in being manifested in through Jesus. And it began to worry Herod. Now, this Herod was not Herod that threatened to kill Jesus. This was Herod that had killed John the Baptist. Okay? Two or three Herods down the road. But I would like to turn and read the account in Matthew that's pretty much the same setting. And I would like to begin here in Matthew, the first verse, and it says, at that time Herod, this same account is basically in Mark, the sixth chapter, but I'd like to read it here in Matthew. It says, at that time Herod the Tetrarch heard of the fame of Jesus and said unto his servants, this is John the Baptist. He's risen from the dead, and therefore mighty works do shew forth themselves in him. Now, do you remember how Herod had executed John? John had rightly accused him of an adulterous marriage, and at a party. It is more complicated than this, but his wife basically asked that you would execute John and bring John's head to her, chopped off. Now that's a gruesome way to go. And Herod did it because he promised to do it. He was probably, alcohol was involved there, I imagine. And now, when Jesus is performing all these miracles, Herod is beginning to sweat. And he's worried that John has arose from the dead, and he can only think that John's going to come after him because he's the one that had him executed. So I'd like to skip down now to the 13th verse. And Jesus heard of it. I believe Jesus heard what Herod was talking about to his servants. Jesus heard about Herod being worried that John the Baptist was resurrected from the dead. And he departed thence by ship into a desert place apart. And when the people had heard thereof, they followed him on foot out of the cities. So it seems like that Jesus was in this area around Nazareth when he got the word that Herod was starting to worry about Jesus. And he went back to this area was all called Galilee, around the Sea of Galilee. And he got in another ship and he went over, and this time he went over to this area on the other side of the sea. And when he got there, kind of the northeast side of the sea, Jesus heard about Herod probably fixing to look for him to try to do something harmful to him. And Jesus heard about it, and he took a ship and went over there. And notice here again that when people knew that Jesus, this is another setting, this is not Nazareth. This is not the people that said, you're just a carpenter. When they heard that Jesus was coming, it says they followed him on foot out of the cities. They went around the long way, you might say, and they hoofed it around to where Jesus was. And when he got there, Jesus went forth and saw a great multitude. And now, have you ever been to visit somebody and they pulled out all of the stops to make you feel comfortable? Maybe travel a long distance to go to be someplace, visit family or something, and you find out after you've already been there that they put you in their bed and they're sleeping on the couch on the back porch or something. It's like, no, you don't have to do that. But they're going, they pulled out all of the plugs. I remember a few years ago, Brother Paul's Uncle Jim come down. First time I believe he had been back to the home place or back to visit his brother, Brother Mike Hightire. it's been a number of years ago, and I'm going to tell you, Brother Mike killed a fatted calf for him and gave him the nice place to sleep. And he got up the next morning and said, Jim told me, said, I woke up to Mike clattering around in the kitchen, and he had made scrambled eggs and bacon and sausage and biscuits, and he had the whole spread for him because he was so glad that Jim had come to see him and brought his family. Well, when Jesus got there and goes across the ship, now you just think about this. You know as well as I do that to go across here in a boat is going to take less effort and less time than somebody that has to walk around by the land. I mean, we learned that in school. The closest distance between two points is a straight line, you know. They went around the curvy way. And when Jesus got there, it said, when Jesus went forth from the ship and he saw a great multitude, and he was moved with compassion. You know, folks, today, I want the Lord to be moved with compassion when he hears my name. I want him to be moved with, I want him to be touched with the feelings of my infirmity. I don't want to try to classify him as just a good man. or a good prophet, but he was the Son of God. He came down here as God and took on the form of man, and he allowed himself to be crucified for the sins of man. And I want him to know that I believe that strong enough that I'm willing to lay everything else aside so I can be in his presence. These people laid things aside. And they, I'm going to use the expression, it's colloquial and I know that, but they hoofed it around there and met him when he got off of the boat. Now, I don't believe they were going along and fishing every once in a while, and they weren't doing a little sightseeing, and they weren't doing a little hunting on the way. They were making notches when they come around the Sea of Galilee, and there was a bunch of them. When he got around, he said he saw a multitude, and because of their efforts, I want to be in the presence of the Lord. That's what every one of their motivation was. And he was moved with compassion. That is a powerful element in a relationship. You want the one that has the ability to help to be moved with compassion, don't you? I do. I want the Lord to be moved with compassion. I want my actions to portray a convincing argument to him that I'm worth his time. Right? That he ought to pay attention to my needs. That woman that pressed through the crowd where you couldn't hardly stir them with a stick, as the old saying is, and she pressed through, and I think the last few feet, she was probably on her hands and knees crawling through all of those legs, and I don't know how she made it to knew which one was Jesus, but she reached out and touched the hem of his garment, and she was made whole. And he said, you remember that, he said, who touched me? And what does his disciples say at that time? That's in the 5th chapter of Mark. Lord, we got all these people bumping around here. Who touched you? You know, there's a bunch of people touching you. Now, that's not exactly how they said it, but they said, Lord, there's people all around. Oh, he said, no, there's somebody touched me in faith. They believed enough that they touched me in a manner. They didn't even touch his person. They just touched the hem of his garment. That wouldn't have been a very significant touch, would it? But her faith reached out and touched the Master. These people that hoofed it around the Sea of Galilee and beat him over to the other side, they were serious. I want to be serious about my relationship with the Lord. So it says here in verse 15, and when it was evening, his disciples came to him saying, this is a desert place, and the time is now past. Send the multitude away that they may go into the villages and buy themselves victuals. And Jesus said unto them, they need depart. Give ye them to eat. Boy, have you ever been asked to do something that was out of your wheelhouse? Daddies, you come home and maybe you have a child with a broken balloon and they come to you and they say, Daddy, can you fix it? It's like, or maybe they say to their sibling, Daddy can fix it. Well, sometimes their expectation is something that you can't fulfill. And Jesus said to his disciples, you feed them. To his disciples. And I can just see his disciples kind of step back saying, you want me to feed them? I don't know if they brought any food with them, but if they did, they just brought enough for 12 men and their leader. They didn't bring enough for a crowd. Lord, what are you talking about? You want us to feed them? And they say unto him, we have here but 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And he said, bring them hither to me. Now remember, this group of people are the ones that had moved Jesus to have compassion on them. Just the sight of them caused him to have compassion on them. And he commanded the multitude to sit down, this is verse 19, on the grass, and took the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes and looked up to heaven and blessed and brake and gave the loaves to his disciples and the disciples to the multitude. I know that Jesus was touched because the scripture says he was, when he got off of the boat and he got the picture of all of these people scurrying to meet him, he thought he was getting away from the hubbub and getting away from the threat of Herod and getting away from the situation that was causing it to escalate in the news. And he got over there, and here it was, the people. The people that had crowded around him when Jairus had said, my daughter's really sick. So he sat down, set the people down, and he took those 2 fish and 5 loaves, and he broke it. And he probably said something like, Lord, you see these people. You see their desire to hear the word. You see the desire in their hearts and the hungering and thirsting they have for righteousness. You know, in the 5th chapter of Matthew, it talks about blessed are those that hunger and thirst after righteousness for what? For they shall be filled. These people were hungry for the word that Jesus had. They were hungry for the fellowship with Jesus. Not like the folks in Nazareth. Jesus' hands were tied there. He couldn't hardly do anything. But not with this crowd. This crowd was different. They would hoof it all the way around the Sea of Galilee to be in Jesus' presence again. And so listen to these details. He handed the food out through his disciples, and they did all eat and were filled. If you had 5 loaves and 2 small fishes, and you broke it up, and just spread it amongst us here tonight, none of us would go home full, right? None of us would. But it says they were all filled. I don't know how the people realized it, but they were handed a little tiny piece of fish, and every time they took a bite of it, they had more to eat, I guess. I don't know. I don't know how it worked. Every time they took a bite off of that piece of a loaf they had and looked back down, there was another bite they could take. And every time the disciples broke a piece off of the piece and handed it to somebody, they went back and there was more to break off. I don't know how this all happened, folks. I just know what the word says. And I know that this happened because Jesus was moved with compassion toward these people that had laid everything aside so they could be in his presence. And they did all eat and were filled, and they took up of the fragments that remained 12 baskets full. And I'm sure that the original meal could have been held in a small sack, but they took up 12 baskets. I don't know how big the baskets were, but I know every one of them was bigger than the original sack. That's all I'm going to say. They had 12 baskets, and they had all eaten, and they that had eaten were about not 12 people, Those that had eaten were about 5,000 men, besides women and children. That's nothing short of a miracle. In fact, that's a fantastic miracle. 5,000 men. Did they all have a wife? Fair assumption. Did they all have two children? Fair assumption. That'd be 20,000 people. You ever tried to feed 20,000 people? I'm going to tell you, it's going to take more than five loaves and two small fishes. But I want you to catch a glimpse of what happens when we have a powerful relationship with Jesus Christ. One that we're willing to lay aside all of the things that would hinder us. These people pulled out all of the stops while Jesus was sailing across the sea. They were scurrying around. I don't know where all they came from. Maybe he started here and they started here, and as they went, more people joined them. I don't know. I just know by the time they got there, they caused Jesus to be moved with compassion. And folks, I want us to have a powerful relationship with the Lord. And I know we don't get it because we're somebody. Because we got the right name over the door. Because you're related to the right person. We get it because we have a personal relationship with the Lord that's powerful. It's going to have trust. It's going to have obedience. It's going to have belief in it. It's going to have to be willing to lay aside the everyday things and put Him first in our life. And I want it. I want us to have power with God. I want us to have something that will cause the world to have to recognize that's a miracle. You don't take five loaves and two small fish and feed whatever it was, 15,000 people. You don't do that. And have 12 baskets left over. You don't do that without a miracle. There's a lot of things in our world that won't happen without a miracle. There's people out there today that need to be delivered from the power of drugs, the power of pornography, the power of anger, the power of hatred and malice and envy and bad attitudes. There's people out there that need deliverance from a lot of stuff. And I believe there's power in the blood to do that. I believe that Jesus can do that. And He wants to do it amongst people that will move Him to compassion and reach out and touch Him believing. You pray for me. I want to be one of those that's in the group that moves Jesus to compassion.